Thank you for downloading this week's episode in the Harm Reduction Coalition podcast series. My name is Alan Clear, and I work for the Harm Reduction Coalition. This week I talked to Jen Kirshner from the Baltimore Students Harm Reduction Coalition. And BSHRC is transforming the landscape, really, in Baltimore, bringing an element of activism and information technology and passion to joining disparate elements together in Baltimore. And I'm proud to say that they came out of attending one of the Harm Reduction Coalition conferences. And as you know, the next conference is in October in Baltimore. Hi, Jen.
Hi, Alan.
You work for the Baltimore Student Harm Reduction Coalition, obviously in Baltimore, that's where you get the name from. But give us some history, because we're down here working on the conference stuff. We're working, meeting people, doing different things, and very often, and it doesn't matter who we talk to, like funders and researchers and people, they point us back to Baltimore Student Harm Reduction Coalition. So you've had an influence here in your work. What's the background to BSHRC?
Well, it's great to hear that, first of all. Basically, the way we started was just a group of like-minded individuals from various universities around the city in different disciplines like public health, medicine, nursing, who were interested in harm reduction. Perhaps they had worked on it before they came to school in Baltimore. A few people had just come from the Harm Reduction Coalition conference in Austin, or were just friends of friends who maybe volunteered on the needle exchange vans or something like that. And we noticed there was kind of a lack of talk of these issues in our curriculum, and it was pretty disappointing to some of us. So we all got together in a room and started talking about how we could make harm reduction a more prominent issue in our disciplines in Baltimore City and the surrounding area.
It was set up to actually affect the educational system that you were involved in.
Yeah, so that's how it started, and that's kind of where the name Student Harm Reduction mm-hmm. came from. That.
And that's singular, not plural.
It is singular in the name. And we use that to kind of mean lifelong learner. We're not exclusive to students of any type, although the majority of our members are graduate or professional level students, some undergraduates now as well. But as opposed to some other harm reduction coalitions, we're not able to offer any syringe access services, or we weren't providing any clinical or direct services of that nature, and we didn't want to mislead the community to think that we are. But people who use drugs, people who engage in sex work, and other vulnerable populations, they're not using traditional care. They might not trust physicians or nurses, skeptical of research or whatnot. And so, we thought, hey, if we educate people now while they're students, perhaps they'll become more well-rounded professionals later, after they get their degrees and are actually in the field.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that, because over the years I've seen a lot of people, start off with in school and doing different projects, graduate into doing this full time. And have you had an impact? Have you seen it in the curriculums?
Slowly but mm-hmm. steadily. It's very difficult to change actual curriculum in big university structures. I would say in most of the schools we've been at, there's been at least one or two allies in the faculty or staff, which have been great and very helpful. But putting an actual course on harm reduction or something, I haven't seen that. One thing we're working on now is, so physicians carry around like these little cards in their white pocket, and it could tell them the level of medication to give someone or something like that. I'm not completely sure, but so we're creating these cards, one that they can use as a quick reference guide if for people who are dealing with substance use or sexual health, sexuality issues, so they can look it up and see maybe some common terms, if their patient uses a phrase that they're unsure of, and they don't have time to, you know, go back to the computer, or looking at a scale that gets at some of the motivational interviewing things. Obviously, you can't put that all on one card, but just, oh, you know, is the, oh, ask my patient what they want to do, what they're willing to do or ready to do, what are some of these other factors that are coming in. So at least getting providers to think about that when they're interacting with their patients in that 5 to 10 minute window that they often have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that, I mean, from my experience, that what I thought would be a simple change that would happen pretty quickly has taken decades now. Mm-hmm. So it would be the same in the educational system too. But I see you guys as like the, almost like the activist end in Baltimore and pushing things a little bit. And I'm on your listserv and I get a lot of, that's how, you know, we find out about a lot of information and stuff happening in Baltimore. And there have been some changes lately in the legislature in Maryland, right? And get into some of that.
So there have been a few changes lately on the state level. So just on Monday, legislation passed that our syringe exchange program will no longer be one for one. It will now be on an as-needed basis. So previously, if someone was a needle exchange client and brought in 10 syringes, they could get 10 back. If people were new, they did get a pack, but you know, if they just forgot them or lost them or the police confiscated their tools, you know, they would have to tell us that story, and they wouldn't be getting as much as they need to get through to the next time, and so they'd be reusing their syringes, possibly sharing them with others. So now someone can come back or come to the van and ask for as many as they need. They'll still be collecting them because, you know, you still don't want used needles littering the streets, so it is an exchange. I think it's definitely a step in the right direction in terms of addressing the public health problem.
Yeah, what about the naloxone stuff that's been happening lately?
Last legislative session, so 2013, a bill did pass that gave Marylanders a way to receive a prescription for naloxone if they did not disclose that they were a recent opioid user. It's not an ideal bill in terms of there's a lot of steps someone will have to go through. We're running a project right now where to try to make that a one-stop shop so people can attend these trainings and learn about opioid overdose response, and then get a prescription and a naloxone kit at the same time. But hopefully in the future it will be easier, you know, perhaps it will become over-the-counter sometime, you know, within the next decade, and then anyone can get it. But, you know, there is a lot of stigma around the issue, and the more people someone has to interact with to get this life-saving medication, it could place a burden, and there's also issues with costs. It's not yet on the formulary in Maryland, and once it does, we're not sure how that will impact it, particularly with intranasal versus intramuscular. So I think, again, this is a step in the right direction, and hopefully we'll be getting it into the hands of people who need it, but we have a little ways to go before that happens.
Yeah, I remember looking at it when it was, I don't know, being proposed and thinking it was a bit crazy. It's a bit over the top. Mm-hmm. But I think that, whereas, I mean, just a sad reflection on me in some ways, or maybe it's just where I'm at now, I would rather take that than not have anything at all, because once you get past that stage, it will make it easier to loosen it up, get naloxone out much more easily.
Yeah, that's kind of how our group felt, and that's why we supported that legislation, kind of, you know, something is better than nothing. And we were advised, you know, that's the culture in Maryland. It's very difficult to get things through, especially issues that impact people who use drugs or people impacted by incarceration. And at least now legislators are hearing about overdose. They, pretty much everyone we talked to is aware of the overdose epidemic here. They know that something needs to be done. There is a Good Samaritan bill in the legislation right now that I actually heard today that it passed the second readers on the both the Senate and the House floor. So it's not a done deal, but it's on its way. Previously, it was just that it could be used as a mitigating factor in prosecution. And as far as BSHRC is concerned, we support the Good Samaritan legislation primarily as a tool for education and advocacy in the future. The bill as it stands in our state and in every state that I know of, it still leaves people vulnerable, for example, because it doesn't protect against outstanding warrants. But it is a step forward to say, hey, there are these things going on. You know, it's lots of different types of people are using drugs or getting into the situation or overdosing, and they're hearing parents and friends and providers come in and provide testimony, and that's valuable.
Yeah, no, I would totally agree. I would totally totally agree with that.
There's many students here in Baltimore. A lot of people come here, especially for school, and young people are eager to do activism, I feel, you know, eager to get involved in something that makes a difference. And especially in Baltimore, you know, everyone comes here thinking, oh gosh, there's so much drugs here, there's so much poverty, and that's true. I think some of it is sensationalized, but it's...
Oh, I wonder how that happened.
I think I'm the only person living in Baltimore who hasn't watched The Wire.
You've never watched it?
I watched a couple episodes, but then I consciously decided not to because I didn't want it to color my view of what's really going on.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I don't have HBO or any of those.
Well,
no,
I watched
it
on
now,
disc,
but,
yeah.
But
well, that's one of our dilemmas here is like, oh, we love The Wire, but that was several years ago now, and how much do you go on about The Wire in 2014?
Right, yeah. And there's David Simon does a lot of work about things going on in the Baltimore area, and I definitely think that that's useful and it's intriguing and it gets people interested, and perhaps one that, you know, in some way led to the Harm Reduction Coalition conference coming to Baltimore, which we're thrilled about. So, you know, anything that gets it here, like we said before, just starting
that's
the conversation.
Not, that's not true.
What's not true?
That's not what brought us to Baltimore. Actually, I think that there was a needle exchange conference in Baltimore back in like 94, I think, or 95.
Well, 1994, that's when the needle exchange program run by the city began.
So that makes sense then.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I liked Baltimore then.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we were thrilled with the Wire connection.
Right.
But we wouldn't put it basically on that. It's because we love Baltimoreans. Do you think this is an idea that other people, other campuses, colleges, universities should embrace?
For sure. Actually, we're very excited because we met some students from Philadelphia just the other week who are interested in at least in bringing more, in supplementing their curriculum with more harm reduction principles. So at the conference in Portland, we gave a talk basically about how to start your own student harm reduction coalition. And it can go hand in hand with an SSDP or any sort of organization like that. One thing that differentiates us, I think, between your organization, the National Harm Reduction Coalition, is we don't only apply harm reduction to substance use. It's really member-driven, so whatever the issues are that our members are interested in. So, you know, it does tend to be substance use, issues related to sex, intimate partner violence, street violence, and we are also, many of us are very interested in how these impact, people of LGBTQ experience. And there, I think that provides an entryway for campuses and cities across the country, and really just for young people to get involved because, you know, one thing I've noticed is this generational divide in the harm reduction coalition, not the coalition, sorry, in the harm reduction community that, you know, people saying, you know, well, we started it, we were here at the front, and that's awesome, and we really respect those people, but... you know, young people, they have fresh eyes. They come with new ideas, and you know, that we are kind of the future, right? We're going to be the next generation of leaders. Some of us are leaders already. And I think it's really important, as we said, to educate people now, to have them at least aware of these issues so that, you know.
I think that's true. I think it's totally true. There has been sort of a void. I think it's being filled now with younger, new leaders coming through. But there was a while it just seemed that wasn't happening, and I think it's essential. So the conference is going to be here. What do you have hopes for with the conference? Because you're part of the organizing committee as well, and we're here. This is like our third meeting for the organizing committee. What are you looking forward to, and how do you want to shape it?
We're looking forward to getting individuals and organizations who aren't typically involved in harm reduction or who haven't been able to access it before to come on board. Personally, I'm not sure how that would happen or mm-hmm. what that's going to look like, but also involving people who are directly impacted by these issues, so the drug using community. That's one thing I find that's really missing in talks on the local level. You know, when it's creating overdose plans or whatnot, we're not speaking directly to the people who are overdosing, and that's extremely important that we need to have the people who are directly impacted at the table. Of course, we would love to see a huge turnout of students and youth, and you know, we're going to work on that to spread the word to various campuses and have people come. If not present, then at least just come listen. To have the East Coast win the soccer game.
Yeah, that's right. Do you play?
No.
No. You can.
Yeah, you don't want me on your team. Or nobody wants me on your team. And aside from bringing new people, just networking with all these people that we talk to maybe on message boards or right. we hear about them doing very similar work, and that's always very exciting at the conferences. Like, oh yeah, I just read your article, or you know, this was your project that you're doing in Massachusetts or mm-hmm. Portland is great. You know, how can we incorporate that here? And hopefully it will work to break down the silos a little bit. And you know, that's one thing I'm hoping will come from it, just people being recharged and willing to kind of work together towards this common cause.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you for being part of this and everything you do.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening. I hope you liked it, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.